Chapter 5. Environment and Civilization. Bacterial spoilage of food. From the rise of prehistoric man to the end of the 19th century, and in some areas to the present day, our main involvement with bacteria was as a result of their ability to spoil food and liquids. The paradox of collective hunting and agriculture to provide for the tribe was that the food gathered could not be stored, particularly in warm and humid climates. This was particularly acute with animal products, which were already contaminated with bacteria poised to damage it. It must have been clear early on that food which had spoiled was dangerous to health. To some extent, all animals had the excessive acidity of the stomach as the primary barrier against bacterial invasion. It is not known whether the cooking of food was developed as a means of sterilizing it, or whether it was considered to improve the taste. Whichever it was, this has a significant impact in reducing bacterial contamination. The ability to reduce the bacterial load was important for human health. However, exposing food to heat to kill the bacteria was only a temporary solution, for once the heat source had been removed, the food easily became contaminated again. A longer-term solution was required. Probably the earliest method of preserving food was to salt it. This was achieved by removing as much water as possible and then soaking the food in high salt concentrations. The salt draws water out of many bacteria by osmotic pressure and largely prevents them growing. The value of salt as a preservative has been known for many millennia, and salt became a highly prized commodity. Indeed, the word salary derives from the Latin for salt, which was given to Roman soldiers for the preservation of their food. Another ancient method of preserving food was to smoke it by exposing it to the smoke of the fire. This probably originated from the use of smoke to deter insects from landing on meat, and the observation that the meat took longer to spoil. The smoke contains particulates that enter the meat and inhibit bacteria growth. Unlike salt, this is often considered to be a flavour enhancer and is still continued in the preparation of meats such as pastrami and fish such as salmon. Honey, as a non-spoiling foodstuff, has been known for 10,000 years, as its collection from wild bees has been depicted in early cave paintings. Honey also preserves other food. It has a very low water content, and its high sugar concentration can inhibit fermentation. Its viscosity also acts as a barrier preventing bacteria from penetrating, and this, coupled with its sticky nature, provides a good defence against bacterial invasion either for itself or for any foodstuff that is placed within it. Many honeys contain antibacterial compounds that actively kill bacteria. One is glucose oxidase, which converts glucose into gluconic acid with the release of hydrogen peroxide gas. This gas is very effective at killing bacteria. Manuka honey from New Zealand is very effective in killing methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. It can also produce hydrogen peroxide, but there are other antibacterials present in it as well. Alcohol production, which is not normally a bacterial process, was probably discovered about 7,000 years ago, the first evidence for it going back to ancient Persia. In sufficient concentration, alcohol can also act as a food preservative. How long this has been known is difficult to judge. The Romans were probably the first to distill alcohol, but it is not known if they used it as a preservative. Robert Boyle in the 17th century identified it as a preservative, and it has been used for preserving food ever since. Bacteria of the Acetobacter genus can oxidize alcohol, converting it to acetic acid, vinegar. These bacteria can proliferate in up to 7% alcohol. Vinegar was known to the ancient Egyptians and Babylonians, and probably was first identified as it destroyed wine. Because Acetobacter requires oxygen, wine kept in sealed containers is not normally affected. Vinegar was found to provide a sharp taste, and has been added to many foodstuffs at a concentration of up to 10%. It is also a preservative and can be used for pickling, but usually at a much higher concentration, about 20%. Almost any natural alcohol product can be made into vinegar, including beer, wine, and cider. The important aspect is to ensure that just the right oxygen level is maintained, as too much will remove all the carbohydrates present. The ability of vinegar to maintain its characteristics over a long period is seen with the making of classic balsamic vinegar, where the vinegar is stored for a minimum of 12 years, though some is kept far longer. Cheese manufacturing. Hunter-gatherers became farmers in the Mesolithic period after the last ice age. The domestication of animals, probably first sheep and goats, most likely took place 9,000 years ago in the Middle East, with herds of cattle being kept within 1,000 years afterwards. An early result of domestication would have been the ready provision of milk from each of these animals. Milk is highly nutritious and a good energy source, but it spoils easily and is soon unfit to drink, especially in hot climates. Some means of preservation was required. The addition of acid to milk with rennet causes the milk protein casein to coagulate and thus solidify. The mixture of solids and liquids, known as curds and whey, is separated and the solid curds are compressed into a block. This block of solidified milk, which we call cheese, is able to resist spoiling by bacteria because they will have difficulty penetrating any further than the outer layer and the block remains acidic, which can be too hostile an environment for bacteria to become established. Therefore, the production of cheese preserves milk, often for many weeks, and it conserves most of the fat, protein and minerals that were in the original milk. It is unlikely that early cheese production was a conscious effort to acidify milk, but rather a chance observation that it could happen spontaneously if the milk became infected with certain bacteria, which convert the sugar lactose in milk into lactic acid. The likely explanation has been that nomads in the Middle East often placed milk into a sheep or goat stomach for storage during a journey. When they came to drink the milk, it had coagulated because of the bacteria in the stomach and the residual rennet present. Whatever the story, basic cheese production probably occurred soon after the domestication of sheep and goats. We have no means of knowing what early bacteria produced the first cheeses, but they were probably closely related to those that are currently employed. These are collectively known as lactic acid bacteria, and a number of bacteria can achieve this, but the most common are Lactococcus lactis subspecies lactis or cremoris, Lactococcus salivarius subspecies thermophilus, Lactobacillus delbrueckii subspecies bulgaricus, and Lactobacillus helveticus. The first recorded observations of cheese production were in Egyptian tomb murals, probably from around 4,000 years ago, and in Babylon at about the same time. Ancient Greek mythology, including Homer, mentions cheese production, and by the Roman civilization, cheese was a normal part of the diet. It is likely that all of these were basic cheeses, made with a single starter bacterial culture, comprising a bacterium related to the ones you can find in Figure 6, which is available in the print version of the book. The results would have been moist, salty cheeses, such as modern-day sheep's cheeses, for example feta from Greece or beyaz peynir from Turkey. In the past 2,000 years, cheese manufacture has become more sophisticated, with specific bacteria used for individual cheese types. The bacteria were naturally present and the effect exploited. The so-called mesophilic Lactococcus lactis are often used in the production of the European hard cheeses, such as cheddar, feta, and the Dutch cheeses. These bacteria do not ferment citrate and do not produce carbon dioxide. The softer cheeses are often formed with the thermophilic bacteria, such as Lactobacillus delbrueckii subspecies bulgaricus and Lactobacillus helveticus. These produce cheeses such as mozzarella and Emmental. Of course, the range of cheeses is now vast, and there is much experimentation with new strains of bacteria, and even mixtures of mesophilic and thermophilic bacteria. In addition to the initial challenge with the starter bacterial culture, it was soon found that the introduction of other microorganisms enhanced flavour and texture. Much of this has been achieved by the use of environmental bacteria that were found serendipitously during the cheese-making process, long before the existence of bacteria was actually known. The involvement of the fungus Penicillium notatum, which gives blue cheese its distinctive colour, is well known, but the involvement of secondary bacterial cultures is less familiar. These are known as adjunct cultures. Recognisable products of an adjunct culture are the eyes or holes in Swiss cheese. The starter bacterium is likely to be Lactococcus lactis, followed by the late addition of the adjunct bacterium, such as Propionibacterium schermanni or Propionibacterium freudenreichii. These bacteria use the lactic acid produced by the starter bacteria and slowly generate carbon dioxide. This gas produces the eyes of Emmental. More often, adjunct bacterial cultures are used to alter texture and taste. The raw cheese is often salty and bitter from the lactic acid, so the use of adjunct cultures can change the final taste by breaking down some of the products of the primary culture. They also often speed up cheese ripening. Bacterial adjunct cultures are usually employed in the manufacture of harder cheeses, as the softer ones are usually treated with moulds, not bacteria. They are often used for washing the outside of cheese as a smear, giving it the characteristic outer surface. These smear bacteria have to be salt tolerant, and their ability to grow at low pH is the main reason why they were originally found on the surface of cheese. Lactobacillus caseae and Lactobacillus plantarum are now added during the manufacture of cheddar. Brevibacterium linens has been used to produce the outer surface of Gruyere, Munster and Limburger cheeses. This bacterium produces the very characteristic red-orange colour of the cheese and is also responsible for the distinctive flavour. Historically, cheese manufacture was often done in damp dairies, where many of these bacteria would have already existed. Now, of course, these bacteria cultures are carefully controlled, and the correct mixture of adjunct bacteria is added to provide a more uniform product. Finally, and equally important, these smears protect against moulds spoiling the cheese and allow the cheese to be stored for months and sometimes years. The principle for this is that a large mass of bacteria prevents the establishment of other microorganisms that might spoil the food. This is probably achieved by the bacteria releasing chemicals that prevent the growth of other bacteria, rather than direct competition for nutrients. In any case, the net result is that these good bacteria prevent bad bacteria from spoiling the food, and hence are a potent form of food preservation. Yogurt manufacture. Yogurt is a Turkish word and means to thicken or coagulate. Yogurt has probably been used for more than 6,000 years, though the first written reports were during the Roman Empire, where it had been noted that nomadic groups were preserving milk by thickening it and that the product tasted pleasant. Its origins are probably similar to cheese production, in that the milk had been kept in sacks made of animal products where it had coagulated. When the sack had been emptied and refilled with milk, the coagulation would have occurred even more quickly. Towards the end of his reign in the mid-16th century, Francis I of France had formed an alliance with the Turkish Ottoman Empire. He developed a severe bout of diarrhoea, which his physicians could not cure. A Turkish physician gave him yogurt, which cured him, and its benefits as a medicine were then widely broadcast. During the Turkish occupation of Central Europe in the 16th and 17th centuries, yogurt became a part of the staple diet of many conquered countries. Its popularity extended throughout Asia, from Sumatra to Russia, both as a food such as raita and as a drink such as lassi, both from India. By the 19th century, it was noted that Bulgarians often lived longer than their Western counterparts. The Bulgarian microbiologist Stamen Grigorov examined Bulgarian yogurt microscopically and noted that there were large numbers of both rod-shaped and spherical bacteria. The rod-shaped bacteria we now call Lactobacillus delbrueckii subspecies bulgaricus, though at the time it was just referred to as Lactobacillus bulgaricus. The associated longevity of regular consumers of yogurt resulted in its promotion as a health food, which is where it stands today. Yogurt is traditionally made by adding a starter culture, often called a mother culture, which is usually taken from a recent batch of yogurt, and adding it to milk at about 40 degrees Celsius. Nowadays, the milk is sterilised by heating it to near boiling first to kill any resident bacteria. In the traditional production of yoghurt, the milk was not sterilised, and the high concentration of bacteria in the starter culture usually, but not always, suppressed the resident bacteria. The original production of yoghurt must have been a fortuitous event, for it requires both the spherical bacteria seen by Grigorov, Streptococcus thermophilus, as well as the lactobacillus. Both bacteria are thermophilic and prefer elevated temperatures, above 40 degrees Celsius for growth, a temperature that is lethal to many other bacteria. This probably explains why yogurt originally developed in southern Asia. The culture in yogurt produces acid, hence the sharp taste if it is not sweetened. However, it is this acidity that preserves it and prevents other bacteria and moulds from spoiling it. Like cheese, it will now keep for many weeks, even if not kept cold. Milk is pasteurised at 85 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes, or 95 degrees Celsius for 10 minutes. Next, milk is homogenised to improve yoghurt consistency. Next, milk is cooled to 40 to 45 degrees Celsius and inoculated with a starter culture of Lactobacillus bulgaricus and Streptococcus thermophilus. Next, mixture is incubated at this temperature for several hours, usually until a pH of 4.5 is obtained, while the bacteria digest milk proteins and ferment lactose to lactose acid. Next, the yogurt thickens and is cooled to 5 degrees Celsius to stop fermentation. Next, flavourings and fruit may be added before packaging. Probiotics. Yogurt is essentially the first probiotic medium. A probiotic is, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, a live microorganism which, when administered in adequate amounts, confers a health benefit on the host. Probiotic was a term first employed by Werner Kohlert while working on dietary problems at the University of Munich in 1953, when he described beneficial bacteria in digestion in contrast to those that cause disease. The presence of lactic acid-producing bacteria in milk is not a fortuitous accident. They have co-evolved as they help to protect young mammals fed initially on breast milk against gastrointestinal diseases. This is achieved by providing significant quantities of bacteria in breast milk, which are able to colonise the gastrointestinal tract and create an acidic environment, so that more pathogenic bacteria cannot survive. As well as lactic acid-producing bacteria, human milk contains bifidobacteria as well. There are many species of the Bifidobacterium genus, and they can colonise many parts of the human body. They are anaerobic bacteria, so they can only operate effectively where there are low oxygen levels, similar to conditions in the lower gut. Bifidobacteria have the ability to ferment oligosaccharides. These are relatively short carbohydrates made up of chains of up to about 10 sugars. In particular, they can ferment the oligosaccharides found in milk. This would certainly assist breastfed infants. Some strains of bifidobacteria can ferment oligosaccharides derived from plants, which would be difficult to metabolise otherwise, and thus their presence could aid absorption of nutrients from plant material. The common species used as a probiotic is Bifidobacterium bifidum. It is a natural coloniser of the gut, and it does maintain the balance of microorganisms, preventing the growth of other bacteria. It is also believed to strengthen the immune system, but much of the research in this area is still ongoing, and the benefits have yet to be proven. Probably the main benefit associated with probiotic bacteria is recolonization of the gut after antibiotic treatment. The effect of some antibiotics can be effectively to annihilate all the main residents of the lower bowel, leaving it vulnerable to infection by pathogenic bacteria. An example of this will be seen later with Clostridium difficile. The introduction of large numbers of beneficial bacteria can restore the balance within the gut before it is eventually recolonised by other harmless bacteria. Sewage disposal. In London, before the 19th century, there had always been an underlying stench resulting from the disposal of human waste, mainly in communal cesspits. It is the reason why the affluent areas of the city moved westward, as the prevailing westerly wind carried the smell towards the east of the city. The summer of 1848 was unusually hot. The cesspits overflowed, and raw sewage flowed into the Thames. The hot weather encouraged bacteria to grow, and this produced an overwhelming stench, known as the Great Stink. This affected business in the Houses of Parliament, and although heavy rain soon dealt with the immediate problem, it was the precursor to the building of London's sewerage system. However, unsatisfactory open sewerage arrangements still exist in much of the developing world. Bacteria have always been an essential component of the disposal of human waste. It appears to be the natural instinct of almost all mammals to defecate away from the immediate living area and often to use a communal area. This could certainly be found in Roman civilization, where collective latrines collected human waste, which was removed to a cesspit. The collected waste is decomposed most quickly by anaerobic bacteria, which originate in the fecal matter itself. Eventually, these bacteria would decompose all the matter. However, in a cesspit, there is no drain, and as it is continuously filled, eventually it has to be emptied or abandoned. Many human communities still use cesspits, though their modification in the industrialized world is the septic tank, so called because of its use of bacteria to break down human waste. This is usually a sealed tank, favouring anaerobic conditions and preventing unwelcome odours. Unlike the cesspit, there is a soakaway, where the liquids from the bacteria fermentation are able to drain into the surrounding soil. So a balance is reached, such that the new waste coming in is offset by the discarded bacterial waste, as long as the system does not become clogged, or the bacteria are not killed by the disposal of detergents or other chemicals. A sewage treatment plant is essentially a septic tank on a much larger scale. Human waste is transported by means of water through sewers to a treatment plant, which may be many kilometres away. Sewage treatment plants often add bacteria after the non-human items, such as fats, are removed. There are many different bacteria found in sewage treatment plants, other than the normal intestinal organisms. They include mainly soil bacteria, such as those of the Bacillus, Pseudomonas, and Acromobacter genera. In essence, bacteria detoxify human waste, whether this is a natural process or in dedicated treatment centres. Animal decomposition. Bacteria are also responsible for a considerable part of body decomposition after death. In the natural state, where an animal dies in the open, the rate of decomposition is often accelerated by maggot activity. However, bacterial activity has usually preceded this. After the heart stops, the oxygen in the tissues is quickly depleted by the aerobic bacteria present, leaving a largely oxygen-depleted environment in which the anaerobic bacteria from the gut and respiratory tract can now proliferate. The animal's own cells break down, and the released proteins, fats, and carbohydrates allow these bacteria to produce acid and gas, often methane and hydrogen sulfide. This gives the bloated appearance following death, and eventually these gases are released, which is responsible for the smell. This is known as putrefaction. This process slows as the available nutrients are depleted. Composting. The death of plants also involves bacteria, usually those that are found in the soil. The most obvious example is the decomposition of leaves after they have fallen from deciduous trees in the autumn. Bacteria are not alone in achieving this decomposition, as fungi are also major contributors. The most useful byproduct of this is composting. The Romans realized that if horticultural waste was piled up, it had generally decomposed by the following growing season and could be used as a fertilizer for the soil. It was a labor-saving method not only to dispose of waste, but also to recycle it. This composting is not a natural process, as most decay takes place in thin layers on the surface, not in large piles. So it often had to be seeded artificially, usually with some soil. In this soil, there is a range of bacteria, which, with the help of some fungi, normally oxidize the plant matter. In their natural state, These bacteria have ready access to oxygen, which they require, as they are on the surface. During composting, the centre of the pile is likely to become oxygen deficient, and thus the pile needs to be mixed to ensure adequate oxygenation. Many of the bacteria are thermophilic, and the temperature starts to rise, the reason why steam is often seen coming off some compost heaps. However, if this is not controlled, then heat may kill the bacteria, causing the oxidation. Water is also required to provide a sufficiently aqueous environment, but the active bacteria are aerobic, and too much water will prevent access of air and consequently oxygen. The net result is that the bacteria break down the cellulose and cell structure, releasing carbon and nitrogen, along with phosphorus and potassium, that is then used as fertilizer in further cultivation.